everyone, I hope you're all doing so well and welcome back to the Criminal Makeup Podcast. Each episode we dive into the minds of some of the worst criminals in history. So today's case has got to be one of the most shocking cases that has come from the UK in recent times. Because back in December of 2020, which was not that long ago, a man named David Fuller was arrested. He was being investigated on two historical murders, and when police showed up to his door, they arrested him, and then what they uncovered, no one could have predicted. Because they didn't just find evidence on the historical murders, they found so much more.
David Fuller thought he'd got away with it. 34 years ago, the electrician murdered two women in Tunbridge Wells, but those murders were not his only crimes.
In fact, what the police found were a ton of hard drives, a ton of SD cards, floppy disks, and added together, they stored 23 terabytes of data. That is so much memory, which included 4 million images, hundreds, if not thousands, of videos of some of the most shocking, disturbing, and inhumane things that you could think of. Think of some of the worst things in your mind right now, and that was on those hard drives.
What age range are we talking about?
60, 70, something like that.
And the youngest?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Why did you record what was going on?
I don't know why.
And David Fuller, he was a 66-year-old man. He was a dad of four. And to the outside world, he lived an extremely normal life.
To go through all this in detail today, right now, I'm just totally exhausted. I've admitted everything. I can't deal with it.
And what truly blows my mind about this case is how he went undetected for so long. This case actually really reminds me of the case of Lucy Letby. David Fuller, for decades, was getting away with his crimes, and some of his crimes happened in a hospital, like Lucy Letby, and Lucy Letby went undetected for so long as well. We don't have a very nice case today. I do have to give a warning. It's going to be disturbing. You will not be the same after this case. I can tell you that right now. So let's dive in. David Fuller was born on the 4th of September 1954, making him a Virgo, and he grew up in the city of Portsmouth in the UK, where he lived with his parents Evelyn and Raymond. Now, not much is known about David's childhood. It's thought that he had a pretty normal upbringing. He lived a pretty normal life. He did well at school, and there's just nothing really notable about his childhood. However, one thing I will say is that later on, David has claimed, and I just want to stress this, David has claimed that he suffered significant trauma at the age of four, and he has blamed this trauma for causing him to go on to be one of the most disturbing, disgusting human beings ever. But did he suffer this trauma? We just don't know. And what was the trauma? Again, I don't know. But what we do know is that when David was a teenager, this is when things really started to go downhill. This is when he started to display some very disturbing behavior that he would carry on throughout his teenage years, but then into his adult life as well. And it started with theft. It started off with him wanting to steal bicycles, and he would just go around and steal them. And he got a thrill out of not getting caught. And him getting a thrill out of not getting caught is just so frustrating, because he did go so long without getting caught. So then as soon as he realized that he got a thrill out of not getting caught, but also he got a thrill out of committing crime, it escalated, and he soon turned to arson. He would go around the neighborhood and he would set fires to neighbors' property. He would also set fire to schools. And we're not talking like small, tiny, contained fires. We're talking huge fires. And David actually was caught for this, and he was talked to by the police. But because he was so young, he faced no punishment. The police kind of just thought that if they tell him off and if they scare him, he won't do it anymore, which most of the time that does work. But it didn't work for David, did it? No. Because his criminal behavior just escalated. Because he soon became a peeping Tom. As he was entering into his later teenage years, David started to develop some very sick and twisted sexual fantasies. He enjoyed lurking outside of people's houses and watching people through their windows. And in particular, he liked watching women get undressed. And he would just lurk in the shadows, and he would spend hours just staring into people's homes. And this almost became like a little daily routine for him. But it escalated, because this is when David became fascinated with voyeurism. And voyeurism, if you don't know, is where you gain pleasure from watching people be naked or engage in sexual activity. But the key thing about voyeurism is that the person that you're watching doesn't know that you're watching. And being a peeping Tom is essentially a form of voyeurism. However, there are more extreme forms of voyeurism. And of course, David took it to that extreme. So instead of watching women from the outside and staring into their rooms and watching them get undressed, David would actually now break into their homes and watch them from their bedrooms. So he would break into a home. It usually was from like a faulty window. He would like go around and check houses to see who had dodgy, weak windows. So he would break in through a window. He would go into the bedroom of a woman, and he would sometimes hide under the bed, or he would hide in a closet, and he would just spend hours in women's rooms. And he would spend so long in there that the woman would come back, she would undress, he was watching her get naked. And he also liked to choose women with boyfriends. So then sometimes he would watch the woman have sex with her boyfriend in her own bedroom, and no one ever caught him doing this. It is just absolutely terrifying to think that someone could just break into your house and watch you. And I just feel so sorry for all of the women that were violated by David, and they don't even know about it. And David continued to do this. He absolutely loved doing this. He would choose a different house all the time. He would sometimes go back to the same houses. He would break in and he would watch women. And I don't know how many houses he broke into. I don't know how many women he watched, but given how long he was doing it for, it must have been into the hundreds. It must have been. So to say that David is an extreme pervert would be an understatement. Now we get to 1972. David is now 18 years old. And this is when he enters into his first marriage. He marries at a very young age, and he gets married to a woman called Jillian. They very quickly have two children together. And to the outside world, this was a very happy marriage. They had a very normal life. However, David was anything but normal, because even though he was married, he was still spying on other women. He was still being a peeping Tom, and he would still break into homes and watch women. But his wife doesn't have a clue about any of this. But David is somebody that truly does lead a double life. He is able to mask who he truly is. He is able to mask that from the outside world. And it is a skill that he possesses that he carries on for the rest of his life. So to the outside world, David was a normal person. He got an apprenticeship at the Ministry of Defense. He trained to be an electrician. He then went on to get a job at the naval base in Portsmouth, and he had very normal hobbies. Like, I'm talking about hobbies that the outside world knew about. So he loved cycling, he loved photography, he loved bird watching. And one thing that is pretty significant to David is that he loves to document his life. He keeps so many diaries. He writes everything down that he does in a day. He likes scrapbooks. I mean, we obviously know that he likes photography. He likes documenting his life, putting it all down. He took photos of everything, which is very disturbing when you know what he's taken photos of. But he would get thousands of photos developed and put them all into scrapbooks. And he loved organizing these things as well. Like, he was a stickler for organization. And throughout his life, he just documented everything, which was very helpful for the police in the end. And 10 years go by, and David is living, to the outside world, a very normal life. But he has continued on for those 10 years to break into homes and spend hours in these homes watching women undress and have sex. However, one time he actually was caught breaking into someone's home, and he was arrested for burglary. He actually went to court for this, but again, he faced no punishment, because as far as the courts were concerned, this was a first offence to a man that was an upstanding citizen. So he just got a slap on the wrist. But then 10 years into the marriage, his wife had an affair, and the couple ended up getting a divorce. And following the divorce, David wanted a fresh start. So he moved away from Portsmouth, and he moved to the town of Tunbridge Wells in Kent. And this is where David soon met his second wife, called Sally. Now again, this seemed like a normal marriage. David was a normal guy, and the couple would actually be married for 17 years. Now, to the outside world, it was happily married for 17 years, but that was not the case. Because David, in this marriage to Sally, became abusive. He was very dominating. He was very controlling. And Sally had to follow the rules of the household. She was never allowed to disobey David. And David, he actually went around the house with post-it notes and stuck post-it notes on pretty much everything with yours or mine on the post-it notes. And Sally, I don't know this for sure, but I can imagine she probably wasn't allowed to touch or move or do anything with David's belongings. Because why else would he go around and put post-it notes on everything saying yours or mine? It's very, very obvious to me why he was like this. Because when it was in the second marriage to Sally, this is when his criminal behavior took another escalation. And it's very clear to me that he was doing this whole post-it note thing, yours and mine, so Sally wouldn't go around snooping, looking at things that she shouldn't be, looking at David's things and coming across what he had in his collection. David also had a pretty weird obsession with the rock band Cutting Crew, and he almost became their unofficial photographer. He would follow this band around wherever they were playing, and he would take thousands of photos of the band, and he would get all of these photos developed, which cost a hell of a lot of money, and he was using all of his and Sally's money to do this. And the couple would get into arguments, probably over various things, financial troubles, the fact that David was so possessive and controlling, I don't know. They would just get into a lot of arguments, and this is when David turned physically abusive. Sally would quite often be seen by friends and family with black eyes, with bruises on her arms. But not just that, David also had multiple affairs. He even tried it on with Sally's own sister. Rightfully so, Sally's sister said no, but he really just has no respect. And now we get to the summer of 1987. At this point, David is 32 years old. He had currently been married to Sally for 5 years at this point. And this is when things get so, so much worse. Because he was still breaking into homes and staying for hours in the homes and watching women. But that wasn't satisfying him enough anymore. But now what David was about to go on and do would have tragic consequences. Because we now need to talk about a woman called Wendy Nell. And in 1987, Wendy Nell was a 25-year-old woman. And she has been described as a generous, beautiful, caring young woman. She had the most beautiful smile. And she just loved people. She always had a kind word to say about everyone, and she was very popular. She had a load of friends, and everyone just loved Wendy. And Wendy had previously been married, but the marriage had broken down, and at the age of 25, she was left distraught. She had dreamed of getting married, finding her perfect husband, and starting a family, but her marriage unfortunately didn't end up like that, and she found herself on her own, and she didn't know where to go, what to do. And in the summer of 1987, she was now living in Tunbridge Wells, and she was living alone in a ground floor bedsit. Now, a bedsit, if you don't know what a bedsit is, it's basically just where you rent a room. Sometimes bedsit rooms, they do have like maybe a small kitchenette, sometimes an ensuite, but that's not always the case. It's basically just renting a room and sharing common living spaces with other people. So this is where Wendy was living, and she was living on the ground floor, and she was getting her life back on track. She was now happy. She had gotten into a new relationship with her boyfriend called Ian, and this was a very serious relationship. They were in love, and they were actually going to get engaged. And Wendy worked as a manager in a Super Snaps, which was a photo developing shop. Do you remember when those were a thing? They're not really a thing anymore, are they? I mean, I'm sure they still exist, but they were everywhere. And it is thought that because David, we know how obsessed he is with photography, we know how many photos he gets developed, it is very, like, truly highly likely, like nearly 100% guaranteed, that David went into the Super Snaps in Tunbridge Wells, which was the same town that David lived in, to go get some of his photos developed. And it is thought that this is how Wendy came into contact with David Fuller. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that sound is? That's the notification sound I hear every time another sale is made on Shopify. And Shopify is an amazing platform. I used it for all of my merch sales. It makes running an online e-commerce store incredibly easy. You don't need to be an expert in coding or web design. You can set up your own online store in no time at all. Shopify scales with your business. You never have to worry about it slowing down, and you can sell across all social media marketplaces such as Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. But not just that. What I love most about Shopify is that it gives you incredible insights into your business. You can manage orders, shipping, payments, all from one single dashboard anywhere in the world. So if you're thinking about starting your very own online business, Shopify is definitely the place to be. And you can sign up for a £1 per month trial at shopify.co.uk/criminal makeup, all lowercase. Again, go to shopify.co.uk/criminal makeup to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/criminal makeup. Now, as soon as David met Wendy, he instantly became obsessed. He started visiting her store over and over again. And one night he followed her home to see where she lived. And then over the course of the next 5 weeks, David would visit her home nearly every single night and just watch Wendy through her window. He would watch her get undressed. He probably watched Wendy with her boyfriend. But David, he was always just there in the shadows, lurking and watching. And neighbors actually saw him doing this. Multiple neighbors saw a strange man lurking in the shadows, looking through Wendy's window, but no one ever reported him to the police. And as far as we're aware, Wendy was not aware of David watching her. Now, at first, watching Wendy through her window seemed to satisfy David. However, it didn't satisfy him for very long. David craved more. He wanted to take things to the next level, and he would go on to commit his worst crime so far. Because on the 22nd of June, 1987, Wendy was working late at the Super Snap store. And who happened to be watching her? Well, of course, that was David Fuller. After work, Wendy's boyfriend Ian picked her up and they spent the evening together. David was following them the whole time. And then it was around midnight where Ian dropped Wendy home. He said his goodbyes and then left. And now Wendy was alone. And this is tragically when David Fuller decided to strike. When Wendy was alone in the bedsit, David Fuller broke in through a window like he always did. However, instead of hiding in Wendy's home and watching her like he did with every other woman, he decided to launch a vicious and brutal attack on Wendy. First, David wrapped his hands around Wendy's neck and he started to strangle her, but Wendy tried to fight him off. But this is when David grabbed an object and just started repeatedly striking her in the head. David then proceeded to rape Wendy. Now, as far as we are aware, this is the first time that David has raped somebody, but the attack would not end there, because tragically, after David had raped Wendy, he picked up the blunt object and he just repeatedly started smashing Wendy's head with the object until her skull caved in. And sadly, this is the moment where Wendy Nell lost her life. But the attack was not over. It wasn't. Because something about David that I haven't mentioned yet is that he was fascinated with dead bodies. That was ultimately what he liked, because David then went on to have sex with Wendy Nell's dead body. David has now escalated to necrophilia, and he spent quite a lot of time with Wendy's corpse, violating her, assaulting her, sexually abusing her until he was satisfied. And then once he was, he climbed out of the window that he had broken in through, leaving Wendy's body behind, and then he just went home to his wife. Now, the next morning, Wendy was supposed to go to work, but when she didn't show up, her colleagues became very concerned. So her colleagues contacted Ian, and Ian was immediately concerned as well, and he rushed over to Wendy's home. He was knocking on the door, but Wendy wasn't answering. So this is when he went around to the window, the very same window that David broken into, and saw that it was open. Ian then climbed in through the window, and this is when he came across the horror scene, because this is when he found Wendy's body lying on the mattress, and she was covered in blood. There was so much blood. The injuries to Wendy's body were absolutely horrific. horrific. She had lost so much blood that it had completely soaked through her pillow. It was all over the mattress and she was no longer breathing, and I can't even imagine Ian finding the woman that he loved in this position. Ian immediately contacted emergency services and police and paramedics arrived to the scene very quickly, but this is when Wendy now was pronounced dead and Ian was just in pieces. He was absolutely broken and the police searched the scene, but we have to remember that this is 1987. DNA was not exactly a thing really. So when the police searched the scene, they didn't really find anything. They were looking for like fingerprints. However, the police found a partial bloody footprint, but that is all they had, a partial footprint, which is not exactly very useful, is it? And obviously this footprint was of David, which will become useful later on, so don't forget this. And the police also found that Wendy's diary and also her keyring had been stolen from her purse. And David had stolen both of these items as trophies. And I think it's very significant that David stole a diary. We know how obsessed David is with diaries himself, about writing everything down about his own life in a diary. And given what I now know about David Fuller, he 100% stole that diary to learn about Wendy, learn about what she liked, what she did on a daily basis, her inner thoughts and feelings, because he likes to do that. He likes to learn about his victims. But the police were not able to link the murder of Wendy now to David. So David, for now, has gotten away with his first murder. And it just makes me so angry. It really does. Wendy was so innocent. She was just living her life and she had no idea that the sick and twisted monster of David Fuller was watching her and had his eyes on her and became obsessed with her. So now we get to November of 1987. This is 5 months after the murder of Wendy Nell. And were things going to stop? Of course they weren't. Because we now need to talk about a second woman, Caroline Pierce. So Caroline in 1987 was 20 years old and she has been described as just incredibly friendly, kind. She had an amazing energy about her and she was just always up for hanging out with friends, and she had a lot of friends and a lot of people loved her. She was currently working as a manager in a restaurant called Buster Brown's, which happened to be a restaurant that David Fuller often went to. And Caroline also lived in a ground floor bedsit just like Wendy. Now, over the last couple of months, maybe starting from around September of 1987, Caroline and her neighbours in the immediate area had noticed that there was a prowler walking around all the time, just hanging around, lurking and staring into people's windows. They had basically noticed a peeping Tom, or should I say, peeping David. But not just that, the prowler was also breaking into homes, and women had noticed that someone had broken into their home and rummaged through their underwear drawer. The prowler had been caught trying to break into a woman's home whilst she was getting ready for bed. Another woman had caught the prowler looking through her windows as she was watching TV, and Caroline Pierce herself had also caught the prowler looking through her blinds. And women in the local area became absolutely terrified of this prowler that was breaking into homes and just staring at women through their windows. Women didn't feel safe in the area, and Caroline didn't feel safe in the area, and she actually installed really high security locks on her windows because this prowler was breaking in through windows. So Caroline was trying to protect herself. And of course, this prowler, if you hadn't guessed, was David Fuller. And I just find this slightly weird. I didn't see this anywhere, but I do just find this slightly weird because David has done this before. Like, he's pretty much an expert at prowling, at being a peeping Tom, at breaking into homes. And for the most part, he has never been caught, which tells me a lot that after the murder of Wendy Nell, he's almost lost a little bit of control. He's lost a little bit of that. And now he is being caught and seen by many people. It's almost like he's gotten such a high from Wendy that he has lost that little bit of control and he's trying to chase that high. Because over those couple of months, where the neighbors were seeing this prowler, David was actually going out trying to find his next victim. And David tragically chose Caroline Pierce as his next victim. And on the 24th of November, 1987, over 2 months after David had started lurking around Caroline's bedsit, stalking her, watching her, this was when he decided to strike. On this evening, Caroline was out late with her friends. And obviously David knew this because he was watching her all the time. And David tried to break in to Caroline's bedsit through her window, but he failed because of the locks that Caroline had installed on her windows. So instead, David just stood in the shadows outside of her home, waiting. And then at around midnight, Caroline returned home. She got out of a taxi, made her way to her front door, and whilst she was walking down the path, this is when David jumped out of the shadows and grabbed her. Caroline actually did scream. She was screaming as loud as she could, and neighbors actually did hear screaming on this night. But no one, unfortunately, reported a thing to the police that they had heard screaming. And David managed to get Caroline to be quiet. And we don't know how he did this. Did he knock her out? Did he gag her? Did he threaten her? We just don't know. But somehow he managed to get Caroline quiet. And then David abducts Caroline right off the street. He didn't take her back to her bedsit, back to her home, like he had obviously done with Wendy. Caroline just disappeared, like into thin air. And we don't exactly know what David did at this point, because he abducted Caroline to take her to another location, but we don't actually know how he did that. Did David have a car? Did he put Caroline in a car? We don't know. Did he drag Caroline somewhere? Or did they both walk to another location? But Caroline just disappeared. The next day, she was discovered missing and she was reported missing to the police, and then they wouldn't find her for another 3 weeks. Everyone was out frantically searching for Caroline. Her boyfriend was absolutely distraught. No one knew where she was. Everyone was going out of their minds, and the police were following every single lead that they could. And then 3 weeks later, approximately 40 miles away from Caroline's home in Tunbridge Wells, a farmer was out in a field when he came across a dead body in a flooded ditch. And tragically, this was the body of Caroline Pierce. At some point after her abduction, David had brutally attacked Caroline, just like he had done with Wendy. He first strangled Caroline, then bashed her head with a blunt object. David then sexually assaulted Caroline before then murdering her. And then after the murder, David then went on to commit necrophilia, again, just like he did with Wendy. And this is ultimately when David realized that it was the necrophilia that was really what he liked. It wasn't the murder, it wasn't the sexual assault of a living person, it was the necrophilia. That is what gave him the biggest pleasure and the biggest thrill, and that truly will become more apparent as this case goes on, unfortunately. Now, after David had sexually assaulted the corpse of Caroline Pierce, he decided to put her tights back on her body, and only her tights. I don't know why he did this. Like, she was completely naked and he decided to put her tights back on. However, this would actually be crucial later on in this case. Oh yes. And then he decided to transport Caroline's body 40 miles away and just dump her body in this ditch. And by the time the police were alerted to Caroline's body, she had been lying in water for 3 weeks because this ditch, remember, was flooded. So her body was already badly decomposed. There was basically no evidence for the police to collect. They did have Caroline's tights, but again, it's 1987, DNA evidence and investigation doesn't really exist right now. But what they did discover is that Caroline's keys were found alongside of her body, but they noticed that a keyring was missing from her keys. And David Fuller, if you remember, had also stolen a keyring from Wendy. So it was this detail that led the police to link the two murders together. They thought that the killer must have taken these keyrings as trophies, and they were correct. But police were terrified at this moment because they thought that they had a serial killer on their hands. And another link that the police had was that both Caroline and Wendy both lived in bedsits, and they only lived approximately about a mile away from each other. That was too much of a coincidence. And this is when the unsolved murders of Wendy and Caroline became known as the bedsit murders. And the two murders would actually go on to become one of the longest unsolved murders in UK history. David managed to get away with these murders for decades. So now we skip forward a little bit to 1989. So 2 years after David had committed these murders. Now, as far as we are aware, and I do want to stress this, David did not commit any more murders. So David is currently 35 years old, and the police hadn't come knocking on his door. Police had no idea that he was responsible for the murders. David was still married to Sally, and she had no idea that her husband was a double murderer. And David, for those 2 years, he had just continued living a normal life. He carried on going to work. He carried on with his usual hobbies of of cycling and bird watching and photography and following the band Cutting Crew wherever they went. He also had his two children from his previous marriage that he would sometimes see. And it's just so crazy that David really did live a normal life. No one would have suspected him of being capable of such horrific crimes. It is like Jekyll and Hyde, it truly is. But now we are in 1989, and I personally think that David didn't commit any more crime in those 2 years, because I think he realized that he was losing control a little bit, and David, he didn't want to get caught. So it was almost like he needed to regain control over his emotions and think about how he was going to carry on committing crime in a more intelligent way, because it was in 1989 that he couldn't control his urges anymore. He needed to commit crime again. He needed to commit necrophilia again, because David, he didn't want to murder people. No, he's a nice guy. He didn't want to murder people. He just wanted to have sex with dead bodies. And David truly didn't want to murder people. But that is only because it was too messy. David just wanted dead bodies. But he was thinking, I need to go about this a different way. I just want dead bodies, but I don't want to murder anybody. And this is when almost a light bulb went off in David's mind. He thought, well, a morgue would be the perfect place for me. But how was he going to get access to a morgue? Well, he went and got himself a job at a hospital. Because if he had a job at a hospital, he would have access to a morgue, and then he would be able to fulfill his sexual desires without actually having to murder people. And now, unfortunately, we get to the part of the case where David Fuller would now become the worst necrophiliac the UK has ever seen. Because in late 1989, David applied for a job as an electrician in the Kent and Sussex Hospital. And he was very good at his job. He was a very good electrician. He had a lot of qualifications, and he was more than capable of doing the job that he was applying for at the hospital. So when he went for the interview, he got through with flying colours and he was offered the job. And David was told his responsibilities. He was told that he would have to carry out maintenance work all over the hospital, that he would have access to pretty much every single area of the hospital because he was the electrician and also kind of a handyman. Therefore, he will be needed in all different parts of the hospital. He probably was one of a very few people in a hospital that was allowed pretty much anywhere. And he would have a key card that would allow him access to everywhere in the hospital, which included the morgue. So he settled into his job. He visited every single area of that hospital. He started to observe everything in the hospital. And he was a very good electrician. Everyone in the hospital loved him. He was reliable. He was friendly. He also got the job done. He also had a few affairs with some of the nurses though as well. However, whilst he was observing everything, learning about the hospital, what he was actually doing was far more sinister, because ultimately he wanted access to the morgue, to dead bodies. But he needed to learn about the hospital before he could do that. He needed to learn about the staff that worked in the mortuary. He needed to learn their timetables. When were bodies brought down to the fridges? What time of day were people working? Where were the CCTV cameras? He was learning. He was absorbing everything in their hospital, learning how he could get into the morgue without being seen, and also how he would be able to assault the dead bodies without being caught. So whenever maintenance work needed to be done in the morgue, David was always the first to volunteer. He was always like, I'll do it. And over time, David became the specialist of the morgue, because the morgue had specialist equipment in there that did require quite unique, quite tricky and difficult work. So whenever the fridges broke or any of the equipment just needed looking at in the morgue, the staff that worked there would start to phone David directly because he knew what he was doing. David made himself needed in that morgue, and he made himself wanted in that morgue, and he also made it so if he ever was in the morgue, no one would question it. It's just so creepy how meticulous he was about everything. He really did make sure that everything was covered, that he always had an excuse for being in the morgue. And the more time that he spent in the morgue, the more he learned the timetable of the staff that worked there, where the CCTV cameras were, where they were pointing. He learned how to access the dead bodies, where they were kept, how long they were kept for. He also learned that the post-mortem rooms didn't have CCTV cameras. And after David had learned pretty much everything that he could learn about the morgue, about the staff that worked there, about the equipment, everything, this is when he started to carry out his very sick and twisted fantasies. David figured out that there were certain hours where no one really entered the morgue, so he could be in the morgue all on his own during those hours. Because he had his little swipe card, he could access the morgue at any time of day. So late one evening, between the hours of 5 p.m. and 7 p.m, when all the staff had gone home, I think it was kind of like the crossover period where the day staff went home and the night staff were just arriving, David let himself into the morgue, carrying a toolbox though, so if anyone caught him, he would have an explanation as to why he was there. And once he was inside, David headed towards the fridges where they kept the dead bodies. And he just started opening up all the fridges, looking at the dead bodies until he found a body that he liked. After he had selected the body that he wanted, he then took the body to the post-mortem room, which was the only room, pretty much the only place in the whole of the mortuary that didn't have CCTV. And David knew how to get to this room without being caught on CCTV. And when David had moved the body of the female victim to the post-mortem room, this is when he began sexually assaulting the dead body. And it's just absolutely horrific. It truly is. Just to think of this poor woman, I don't know how she died, but just to think of this poor woman, she's not even allowed peace in death. To think of the family members that were grieving over this woman, and then David is there sexually assaulting her body. Now, after this first time committing necrophilia in the hospital, David was absolutely loving life. It was almost like he had broken a seal, because he was able to commit necrophilia in the hospital and no one caught him. He had the biggest high of his life, and he wanted to do it again and again and again and again, because whenever he got the opportunity, David would go to the mortuary when he knew that no staff were going to be around, and he would browse the dead bodies until he found one that he liked. And it's just so sick when I say it like that, but that is truly what he did. He was almost like flicking through a catalogue, just looking at these dead bodies, analysing them, whether they were suitable enough for them to be his victim. And then as soon as he found a corpse that he liked, he would take that corpse to the post-mortem room that had no CCTV, and then he would do some of the worst things imaginable to these corpses. And I'm really sorry, I am going to go into a little bit of graphic detail, because I think it's important. We need to go into detail. We need to know how much of a monster David Fuller truly was, because over time, the assaults, they got worse and worse. And David would sexually assault these bodies in various disgusting ways. It would include him first stripping naked, like completely naked, apart from his socks, and then he would insert his penis into the mouths, vaginas, and anuses of these dead bodies. He would then also penetrate the dead bodies with his tongue and fingers, and these sexual assaults would sometimes last for 15 minutes, but sometimes a lot longer. And as time went on, David wanted to experiment more. Like I said, his assaults, they would always get worse and worse. He would always want to try out new things. So he started to position the dead bodies in different areas of the room. He would sometimes place them in a chair and sexually assault them in a chair. He would sometimes put them on the floor. Sometimes he would move them to like a different bed. Sometimes he would climb on top of them. And then David wanted even more of a high. So he started attaching electrical medical equipment to himself to give him more of a sexual thrill. So one of the devices that he would use was a TENS machine. But a TENS machine is for like pain management. And it's kind of a smallish device that is kind of like a pad that you stick to your skin. And it sends small electric currents to your body to kind of help with pain, help relieve pain. And David started using a TENS machine, and he would attach the TENS machine to the victim, but then also his own genitals. And he would activate this device until he reached orgasm. It's just so sick. Like, it's so sick when you think about the fact that he is doing this to dead bodies in a hospital. I feel like I need to stress that. This is all happening in a hospital that is supposed to be safe. safe. You go to a hospital and you are so vulnerable. You are so weak. You need help. You need looking after. You need protection. You don't need someone like David Fuller and his creepy, disgusting hands all over you. Oh God, I just can't. This is why I say it reminds me of Lucy Letby, because how the hell has no one caught him doing this? He was doing this for years, going in and abusing dead bodies in the morgue. And David continued carrying out necrophilia at the hospital for over a decade. Let that sink in. Over a decade. I just think it's so crazy and worrying that security in the hospital was that lax that they just allowed David to just do this. Like, how was he allowed to do this? And the whole time he was just living a normal life. All of his co-workers at the hospital absolutely loved him, said how friendly, kind, approachable he was. And in 1999, David is now 45 years old. His wife, Sally, actually cheated on him, which, you know what? I've got to say, I don't blame her. So after Sally cheated on him, she just cheated once, by the way, and David cheated countless times, but Sally cheated once and they got a divorce. And you know what? I'm so happy for Sally. I'm so happy that she was able to get out, truly, and his first wife. But David didn't stay single for long. Oh no, he actually entered into another relationship with a nurse. Oh my God, a nurse called Marla. And they soon got married and then they went on to have two children together. So now David is a father of four. And I don't know why, but I think that just makes this worse. Like, I don't know. How can it be worse? Like, truly how? But the fact that he has children, how does it not enter his mind that he is abusing other people's children? And Marla didn't know who David truly was. She didn't know that he was a double murderer, that he was a necrophile. But David's crimes just continue and continue. So 10 more years pass. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. It is now 2010. David is now 55 years old and he has been getting away with his crimes at a hospital for 20 years. How can someone get away with committing necrophilia for 20 years in a hospital? It's beyond me. So in 2010, the hospital that David was working at, which was the Kent and Sussex Hospital, it had actually closed down. So you would think, finally, okay, the hospital that he works at has closed. Surely this means that he's going to stop committing all of this crime. But no. Unfortunately, not. Because instantly, David applied for a job at another hospital, the hospital in Tunbridge Wells, which is where he lived. And David, because he was so qualified, he got given the job. He goes to another hospital where he is now an electrician and a maintenance worker at this hospital, and he has access to pretty much everywhere in the hospital, including the morgue. And he would now just continue on his crimes at this new hospital. But now we are in 2010 and smartphones are a thing. Everyone or most people have smartphones in 2010 with cameras on them. And unbelievably, David now starts to film himself abusing dead bodies. David is essentially vlogging his abuse, what he is doing in a morgue. I mean, it's only a natural progression, really, because he's so obsessed with documenting everything about his life, so it truly doesn't surprise me. So after David would abuse a dead body, he would film the whole thing, and then he would go home and he would transfer all of his videos from his phone onto various hard drives, and his hard drives were so organized. All of these different folders with all of these different names. And some of these folders were called Necrolord, Deadliest, which I don't know what that would mean, like deadliest, what? And then another folder titled Best Yet. Ugh. No, you don't even want to think about it. No. And even though David has only just started to record his attacks, he had actually been taking photos of the attacks, the abuse, since the 90s. One of his hobbies and passions in life was photography. And before smartphones were a thing, David would actually take in a compact camera into work with him. And over the years, he had built up so many images. He had nearly 800,000 images. Let that sink in. 800,000 images and over 500 videos. It is astronomical, the amount of videos and images that he has of his victims. I just don't know how he was so confident with all of this. Like, how can he just walk into a hospital, swipe himself into the morgue, which means that somewhere in some database, it has been catalogued that he has gone into the morgue. And then how is he so bold to spend 15, 20 minutes abusing a dead body whilst taking now videos but photos. And we know that David likes to document everything. He would write down things like the victim's name, their age, how they died, and various other details about the attack so he could relive all of these attacks at a later date. And then as soon as we get to 2010, social media is now a thing. David would also look up some of his victims on social media. David liked to learn about his victims. What was their life like before they died? He wanted to know their interests, their hobbies, their friends, their family, where they lived, what they did as a job. He wanted to know everything about his victims, and it's just so disturbing. And that is why, if you cast your minds back to when he murdered Wendy, he stole Wendy's diary. And that is why I think David stole her diary to learn about her, because now he does it with social media. And the abuse carries on throughout the 2010s, like the whole decade. It is mind-blowing how long he was doing all of this for, and he was getting away with it. And we don't know the identities of the majority of David's victims. However, we do know some, and we do know some details of some of the victims. So I am just going to share that with you right now. And it's just truly heartbreaking, because over the years, David assaulted hundreds, let that sink in, hundreds of dead women. And the age ranges of these women, or should I say children and women, were the ages of 9 years old to 100. That is the age range of his victims. He was also abusing the corpses of children. His youngest victim was a 9-year-old girl, and he did abuse multiple children. And all of these victims, they had very different lives. They came from very different backgrounds. Some of the victims were teachers. Some of the victims were even NHS hospital workers. Some of them were mothers. Some of them were children. Some of them were grandmothers. One of his victims was a talented skier. Another had flown solo across the Atlantic Ocean. In fact, one of David's victims, which was a 92-year-old woman, had worked at Bletchley Park during World War II, and she was one of the staff that famously cracked the code that ended the war. And now her body was being horrifically defiled by David. But it gets worse. Some of his victims had taken their own lives. Some of them still had the scars on their body from where they had taken their own lives. There was also cancer victims. Some of his victims still had medical paraphernalia attached to them, like catheters. There were some victims that David took such a liking to that he abused their bodies multiple times. There were some victims that he abused pre-postmortem and then after their postmortem. But it gets worse. I know I keep saying that, but I feel like I just have to keep warning you that it gets worse. There were some times where David would abuse a dead body, and then half an hour later, the family of the person that he has just assaulted would come in and view the body, not knowing that only like half an hour or an hour, maybe a couple of hours before, David was having sex with their dead body. It's just too much to even think about. Death is hard to deal with anyway. But the fact that these families were going to see the body of their loved one who had just tragically passed away, spending time with their body, saying goodbye, maybe touching their hair, kissing their forehead, hugging them. The fact that they were spending this kind of time, oh God, I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. The fact that they were spending that quality time, the last moments with their loved one, and David, not too long before, had his grubby hands all over them. Too much to think about, and there is truly a special place waiting for David. There really, really is. And I'm also angry at the hospital. I'm angry at the people that allowed him to do this. And we'll get on to how he was able to get away with his crimes in a moment, but we still need to talk about the victims, because we only know the identities of some of his victims. And his youngest victim, the 9-year-old girl that we have already briefly spoken about, her circumstances are just so heartbreaking. So obviously she's only 9 years old. She should still be alive. She should never have died. Her life came to a very tragic, very soon end, and her mother was so distraught. So after her daughter had passed away, she had given clothes for her daughter to wear, like very nice clothes. She had also given the hospital toys so her daughter wouldn't be alone, so she could have her favorite toys around her. And her mother had also written her daughter a note that she wanted to be with her daughter's body. And when David assaulted the 9-year-old girl's corpse, he took away that note that her mom had written. He took away all of her toys. He took all of her clothes off and then assaulted her. But that is not the only tragic story. In Easter of 2014, a family of four, they are originally from Paris and they were coming to the UK for a holiday. And they were so excited about going sightseeing in London. They really wanted to go and shop on the high street. They were very excited about going to Primark, especially. But tragically, shortly after they had driven off the ferry, because they came on the ferry, they came over the channel. Shortly after they had driven off of the ferry, a lorry smashed into their car, and it was an absolutely horrific incident, and three out of the four family members died in this car crash. So it was a family of four, the mom and dad, Nike and Michael, and then their two daughters, 22-year-old Helen and 16-year-old Mary. And Michael, the dad, and the two daughters sadly passed away, and they were transferred to the Tunbridge Wells Hospital, where their bodies were placed in the morgue, where David Fuller now had access to their bodies. And David committed necrophilia with the two daughters, Helen and Mary, probably not too long after their mother had gone to see their bodies. And then finally, we know the story of one more of David's victims, who was a 24-year-old woman called Azra. She was a law graduate from the London School of Economics, and she had such a bright future ahead of her, and she was incredibly close with her mom, Nevris. However, tragically, in July of 2020, Azra was driving her car across a bridge in Kent when it caught fire. So she immediately evacuated her car and she ran across the carriageway and she tried to climb over the fence that divided the two carriageways. She tried to climb over the fence to try and get on the other side of the road because she's on a bridge and there's no like pavement or anything for her to go to. So she tries to climb over the fence to get to the other side of the road to get to safety. But what she didn't know, because it was dark, is that there was a void between the two carriageways. So she climbed over the fence and she just fell through the void between the two carriageways and she fell to her death, which is so tragic. What the hell? That is so heartbreaking. And her death was all over the news. There was news stories about it because it was so horrific. It was so tragic. And her mom, Nevris, was so distraught and angry about how this could have happened. And we are in 2020, which means we are in lockdown. So Nevris was not allowed to see her daughter's body for 5 days because it was locked down. However, Nevris wasn't allowed to see her daughter. But guess who had access to her? David Fuller. David Fuller. Oh my God. It's unbelievable that her own mother couldn't go and see her because of lockdown. But David could just swipe his card and go in. And on the 20th of July, 2020, which was 4 days after her death, David Fuller swiped himself into the mortuary, got Azra's body out of the fridge, took her body to the post-mortem room and assaulted her dead body. This was the day before Nevris was allowed to see her daughter. So then as soon as Nevris was allowed to see her daughter, literally as soon as she left, David came right back in and assaulted her daughter's body once again. And he violated her body for 20 minutes. How was David Fuller, a maintenance worker, allowed to be in the morgue unsupervised for 20 minutes? But then 2 days later, he went back to Azra's body and violated her body for a third time for 35 minutes. How? How? And it makes me sick to my stomach what David did to Azra. And then after the third time that he violated her body, he then went home and looked her up on social media. And you're probably thinking, well, how the hell is he getting away with it? Because I have that same question. And to be honest, I don't really have a clear answer to you. I have kind of an answer of why he was getting away with it, but it still is not sufficient. Like, it's not good enough, these answers. Because we are now in 2020. This is 3 decades that he has been working in hospitals and abusing dead bodies. He has been getting away with it for 30 plus years. And as well, we're in 2020, like the advancements in technology, how did no one clock on to what he was doing? So in 2020, the mortuary had 5 staff members and they all worked between the hours of 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. And David worked from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., which meant that there was a 3-hour window where David could have the mortuary to himself. However, this is a morgue. Hospital porters can bring down a body at any time. However, David knew that because the mortuary staff were not working, the post-mortem rooms would be completely empty until the next day. And there is actually a map of the mortuary online, and I will put it on the screen so you can see it, because honestly, you need to see it because I can't fully explain the layout and everything. So on the left-hand side of the picture, you can see that there is a receiving area, which is where the hospital porters would bring in a dead body. And then the blue strip down the middle, those are the fridges, which is obviously where the hospital porters would then put the bodies in. And then right next to the fridges, you can see that it says post-mortem room. Now that is where David would be lurking, and he would wait until there were bodies in those fridges to choose his next victim to assault. Now, because of the layout of this mortuary, if you were in the receiving area, if you were placing a body in the fridge, you actually couldn't see through the other side. So even though David was on the other side of those fridges in the post-mortem room, you couldn't see through those fridges. So hospital porters could be bringing in a body, put the body in the fridge, and David could be in the post-mortem room abusing a body and no one would ever know about it. And then also on the map, you can see where the cameras are. You can see that there's cameras pointing here, there, and everywhere, except for the post-mortem room. Now, there are no CCTV cameras in the post-mortem room because, apparently, according to the hospital, they want to preserve the dignity of the dead, which is just really ironic, isn't it? Wow, wow, wow. Which I understand. I do understand that. I understand why there isn't cameras in there, because you want to respect the dead, you want to respect their privacy. I get it. But it's just really ironic that they want to protect the dignity of the dead when David Fuller is literally doing the complete opposite. And David got so cocky and confident that he would never get caught that there would be times where he would be in the post-mortem room completely naked, abused a dead body, and porters would be on the other side of the fridges putting bodies in the fridge. And David would stop the assault. You know, he didn't want to make any noise. He didn't want to alert anyone that he was there. But he was so cocky and confident that he would just stand there naked with the body on the table or on the floor, in a chair, wherever he had placed them, and just waited for the hospital staff to leave. I don't know how he was so bold. I mean, I say that, but I do understand why he was so bold, because he was getting away with it. Every single time David entered that morgue, he had to swipe his card. There is CCTV cameras pointing at the entry points to the morgue in the hallways. He would have been caught on CCTV entering the morgue. It should have also been flagged in the system that this maintenance man, that this electrician, was entering the morgue multiple times a day, every single day. There needs to be higher security in these hospitals, especially after this case and after Lucy Letby. I just don't know how no one that was monitoring the security of the hospital thought to themselves, I wonder why this maintenance man is entering the morgue every single day. And throughout his attacks, every single time he entered the morgue, he always carried a toolbox with him, so he always had an innocent explanation as to why he was there. But he never got caught. He never had to actually explain why he was there. No one asked questions. It's just so crazy that no one asked questions. However, now we get to late 2020. David had been getting away with his crimes for 30 years. But was he going to get away with them for much longer? And the answer to that would be no. Because everything was soon about to come crashing down on David. And it was all because of the murders that he had committed 33 years ago. So now we return to the unsolved murders of Caroline and Wendy, which happened in 1987, which were called the Bedsit murders. So obviously we know that David committed those murders, but it was only in 2020 that the police also learned that information. So no unsolved murder case ever gets closed in the UK. If a murder is unsolved, it will constantly over the years be revisited to see if it can be solved. Is there an advancement in technology? Can they do something more with DNA? Has more evidence come forward? And this is what was happening with the murders of Wendy and Caroline.
Back in 1987, the body of a young woman was found. She'd been murdered. Crime Watch did a reconstruction. 5 months later, another girl's body was discovered. Both lived in the same town, in Tunbridge Wells, both killed in the same way. Police thought a serial killer was on the loose, and they launched a massive manhunt. 20 years on, no one has ever been caught. Detectives have never given up, nor have the victims' families.
So in 2008, because of advancements in technology, the police were able to uncover DNA evidence of the killer at the crime scene of the murder of Wendy Nell. However, just because they now have the DNA evidence of the killer, they still didn't know who the killer was. They put it through their database, but they had no match. And then in 2019, after more further advancements in DNA technology, this is when the police were able to identify DNA evidence on the tights from Caroline. I told you that those tights would be important because if you remember, after David had attacked Caroline, he had put her tights back on. And we don't know why. Like, why did he randomly put her tights back on? We don't know. However, he had left DNA evidence on these tights. So now the police had DNA evidence of the killer from Caroline's murder and Wendy's murder. And this was the first time in 2019 that the police could forensically link the two murders together. Because obviously they had always had a suspicion that both of the murders were committed by the same person, but they had no evidence. However, the DNA of the same person was found on Caroline's tights and also the crime scene of Wendy. But again, just because they have the DNA evidence, they still don't know who it is. But they were determined to find the killer of Wendy and Caroline. So they searched through the database for anybody that has a similar DNA profile to their killer. And this took a very long time. They matched the DNA to 1,000 people. And then they whittled down this list to 90 people. And then they interviewed all 90 of those people with a similar DNA profile. And they eliminated people one by one. They were looking for somebody that was approximately the right age, that had links to Tunbridge Wells. And this is when they finally came to David Fuller's brother. So they got the address of David Fuller. They were confident that they had their killer. And on the 3rd of December, 2020, police show up at David Fuller's home in the early hours of the morning.
Hello.
Morning. This place.
Hello. We need to come and speak to you.
Now, David is already awake. He's actually already dressed. It's almost like he's expecting them, which is kind of weird. I don't know. Maybe he spoke to his brother. Maybe he knew that they were on their way. But I just want to stress here that the police have no idea that David is a necrophile. They just think that he is responsible for the two historical murders. They have no idea about anything else.
David, you're under arrest on suspicion of the murders of Wendy Nell and Caroline Pierce in 1987. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned, something which you later on in court.
So the police take David into custody, and the first thing that they do is take a DNA sample off of him, and it was confirmed that David Fuller was the murderer of Caroline Pierce and Wendy Nell. And he was charged with both murders, and this then gave the police grounds to search David Fuller's home. And oh my God, what they found. I don't think that they were expecting to find what they did. Because in December 2020, police returned to David's home to search it, and they entered David's office, which was out of bounds to his wife and children. Remember, we all know that he likes to use post-it notes on telling people what's his and what's theirs. So the police enter his office, and there was a ton of documents everywhere because he had pretty much documented his whole life. So there were documents, folders, papers, diaries, journals. But then the police started to look through all of the nooks and crannies of this room, and they came across this chest of drawers. And they pulled out this chest of drawers, and on the back of the drawers was like a secret storage compartment full of hard drives. And it was actually filmed, by the way, the police searching David's office. And it's just truly just so surreal to see it. So the police started going through the footage on these hard drives. And you can see one of the officers saying, is that a dead body?
Why does that person look dead?
And this is the moment where everything came crashing down on who David Fuller truly was. The police started going through file after file, and they found so many photos of dead bodies from the morgue. They also found so many videos of dead bodies from the morgue, of videos of David sexually assaulting these dead bodies. And this is when they realized that the murder investigation that they had been working on, this historical murder investigation, was so much bigger. And in the end, after the police searched the whole house, they seized 100 hard drives, 1,300 CDs, 2,200 floppy disks, 30 mobile phones with various SIM cards, and over 34,000 printed photos. And all of this together added up to over 23 terabytes of data. And it took 9 officers 5 whole months to process all of this material. They even had to purchase 4 high power computers because the amount of data was just so large. And after analyzing all of the data, the police found that David had taken photos and taken videos of himself sexually abusing corpses in the 2 different hospitals that he worked at dating back to 2007. But obviously we know that he was sexually abusing bodies way before then. But obviously all of this data and everything, it only went back to 2007, the time where it was more common to have smartphones and digital cameras, smaller devices that could fit in your pocket and take photos and take videos. And the police realized that they were dealing with the worst necrophile that the UK has ever seen. But that is not the only thing that the police found. Oh no, no. If you thought that David Fuller couldn't get any worse, you are mistaken. Because on his hard drives, his computer, his floppy disks, all of that, they found a ton of child pornography. Yep, just when you thought he couldn't get any worse. Not only is he a murderer, a necrophile, he's also a paedophile. And on these hard drives, police found over 4 million images of children being sexually abused. I don't even know how anyone would have 4 million images of anything, let alone child pornography. And as far as the police could tell, all of this pornography was downloaded from the internet. They didn't think that David had participated in the abuse himself. But again, this was one of the largest and most extensive collections of child pornography the UK has ever seen. Like, seriously, how many things in this case are the worst of the worst? But the police found more. They found more. They also found that David had been secretly recording a relative of his wife's whenever she came over. So one of his wife's family members, we obviously know that she was female, but we don't know the relation of her to David's wife. But whenever this family member would come over to the home, David would set up a little spy camera. He actually had a pen, like a regular pen that had a camera in it. And he would put the pen in his jacket pocket and then hang the jacket in the bathroom. And then he would secretly record the female family member getting undressed, getting in the shower, going to the toilet. But if you thought that was bad, oh my God. So then he would take the images and the videos that he had taken and he would crop out her head. And then he would take an image that he had taken of one of the dead bodies in the morgue and he would place the cropped head of the family member onto the dead body that he had sexually abused. And then he would pleasure himself. Truly, this man, does he get any worse? So following the horrific discoveries, the police go back and interview David Fuller. Now, initially when the police interviewed him, he was denying everything. He was saying, no comment, no comment, no comment.
I'm going to ask you, first of all, why you're forensically linked to those murders.
I don't know why.
Did you seriously assault Wendy Nell within that flat?
No comment.
Do you remember any blood at all?
No comment.
A lot of the time he was trying to act dumb. He really thought that he was going to be able to get away with everything. But now when the police go back to him and now they have all of the evidence, they have all of these photos, the videos, everything. They go back and interview David once again. And you can see from this interview, because you can also watch this interview online as well, you can see that David is physically uncomfortable.
Do you know when you started the Kent and Sussex Hospital?
In 1989.
What was your role there?
Electrician.
And did you do much work in the mortuary?
Yeah, we did quite a lot in there.
So in the interview, the interviewer says to David, Can you tell us about this? Like, who are these people? Why have you done this? They just want information.
There's about approximately 80 allegations of sexual penetration with corpses. So whereabouts should we start?
And David actually says, I don't want to talk about this. It's making me uncomfortable.
Where do you feel comfortable starting to talk about?
I'm not comfortable at all.
Do we help you?
And when I saw that, I just had to stop the interview for a second and gather myself. I was like, what? What? This is making you uncomfortable? You did all of this. What about the poor victims that you were abusing? What about the victims that you have murdered? What about the families of the victims? How do you think all of this is going to make them feel? But oh no, it's making you uncomfortable, okay.
Why did you record what was going on?
I don't know why.
And they pushed David to talk about the youngest victim. Like, how old was his youngest victim?
What age range are we talking about?
60, 70, something like that.
And the youngest?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. Nine.
And again, you can see that David is very, very uncomfortable about this. And he does admit that the youngest victim was only 9 years old. And the police are trying to get information out of David because this case is huge. They need information. There's so many unanswered questions.
Not insane. I may have some sort of residual personality problems, which, you know, I've gone a completely almost Christian life and deadliest life all together at the same time with no crossover. You know, it's just two different personalities.
But in the end, David, he just completely closed off. He wasn't going to talk about any of this because it made him feel uncomfortable.
I'm admitting the offences, but I don't really want to go into detail, if you appreciate that. I need to just say something about the whole thing. Because to go through all this in detail today, right now, I'm just totally exhausted. I've admitted everything. I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it. Every single thing you're saying to me is killing me off. Honestly, it really is. So
the interview ended. David hasn't really said anything. He's also showed no remorse for what he has done. And following this, the police had the painstaking task of trying to identify the victims of David Fuller. They were able to identify some of the victims by what David had documented in his diaries and journals and on his computer. But then other victims they had to identify from the images, from the videos. And there was one officer, a sergeant named David Shipley, that took on the task of going through every single image, every single video to try and identify the victims of David Fuller. And I truly feel so sorry for Sergeant David Shipley. No one should have to look through images like that. No one should have to watch videos of things like that. And Sergeant David Shipley has said that it took a huge toll on him. He was having nightmares. He was breaking down, crying. He had a mental breakdown from having to do this task. But in the end, over 100 victims were identified. And those are only the ones that have been identified. I can pretty much guarantee you that there were more than 100. But now possibly comes the worst thing that the police have to do, and that is inform the families of all of the victims, which would have been an absolutely awful task to take on. And as you can imagine, the families of the victims were absolutely distraught. They were in pieces after finding out what David had done to their loved one. There were so many mixed emotions. There was hurt, there was anger. Some of them have felt like their memories of their loved one had been tainted now because of what David had done. Quite rightly so, there was anger towards the hospitals on how he was allowed to do this. Some of the families of the victims wish they were never told because it put so many horrific images in their mind, imagining what David had done to their loved one. And it sent a lot of people to a very dark place. And remember, we talked about one of the victims, 24-year-old Azra, who tragically fell from a bridge to her death. Well, her mom, Nevres, was so distraught and angry after she had found out what David had done to her daughter that, without thinking, she actually grabbed a knife and stormed over to the police station where David was being held. And she ran inside the police station holding the knife, shouting that she wanted to kill David. Now, Nevres was arrested and placed in a prison cell for 36 hours, but eventually she calmed down and she was able to inform the officers about what had happened to her, what David had done to her daughter, and the officers sympathized with her. They let her go with no charges, which I'm happy about. Like, I couldn't believe that they even put her in a prison cell. And speaking of Nevres, this is completely unrelated, but I think it's important. Nevres was actually a social worker and she worked for Haringey Council, and she was one of the whistleblowers in the Baby P case, which I could not believe it when I found out that. The Baby P case, if you don't know, is one of the most horrific cases that have come from the UK, and I truly do not have the time to go into the details of it. But Nevres was a whistleblower on that case, and my heart just truly goes out to her. I cannot believe what David did to her daughter. It's truly despicable. There are no words to describe how evil David is, and I truly, truly hope that Nevres is doing okay. And I just hope that all of the families of every single victim of David is doing okay, because I just cannot even imagine the damage that that one man has caused so many people. So now we get to November of 2021, and this is when David was going to trial. But I want to stress that this trial was for the murders, the historical murders of Caroline and Wendy. This was not a trial for all of his necrophilia. So because it was a trial for the murders, everything that he had done at the hospitals, all of his necrophilia, it couldn't come out to the public because the prosecution didn't want to taint the jury in the murder case. And David at the trial, he pleaded not guilty. He was actually questioning the validity of the DNA evidence that was linking him to the murders. But it's like, DNA is DNA, David. Doesn't really matter. But the prosecution, they had so much more evidence. Not just the DNA, they had so much more evidence. When they searched David's home, they found multiple receipts of the restaurant that Caroline worked at, showing that David was at that restaurant. And David, prior to this, had denied that he had ever even been to that restaurant. They also found photo wallets from the Supersnap store, which was where Wendy worked. And if you remember, at the crime scene of Wendy's murder, they found a partial bloody footprint. Well, this footprint perfectly matched David's shoes that he owned at the time. And how did they know that he perfectly matched the shoes that he owned at the time? Well, the fact that David liked to document his whole life, there were so many pictures of himself. And there was a picture of him wearing these exact shoes. And from this photo, police were able to match the bloody footprint to the shoes that he was wearing. And the evidence was so overwhelming that 4 days into the trial, David actually changed his plea to guilty. So following this is when all of David's necrophilia acts came to light. And I actually remember sitting at home, I was eating dinner, I was watching the news, and I remember when this story came on.
David Fuller thought he'd got away with it. 34 years ago, the electrician murdered two women in Tunbridge Wells, but those murders were not his only crimes.
I actually had to stop eating. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I think what I find so crazy about this case is that it happened in modern times. I remember thinking that back in 2021 when I first heard about this case on the news. How was someone like David able to get away with the crimes that he was doing in today's world? Because you would think with what David was doing, with how long he was doing it for, you would think that it would be back in like the 60s, 70s, 80s that he was committing all of these offences. But no, he was committing them as late as 2020. And at David's sentencing hearing, this is when the families of the victims finally got to speak. Wendy's and Caroline's parents both spoke about how both women were such incredible people, that they were just a light to people's lives, and how their lives had been completely torn apart by not knowing what had happened to their loved one. And this is also when some of the families of the victims that David abused in the morgue came forward to speak. And what they said was just absolutely harrowing. One son said that it felt like he had lost his mother all over again. Other family members said that they couldn't sleep, that their mental health had just completely fallen apart. And the court even heard from the mother of the 9-year-old girl that David abused. And she broke down, saying that she just couldn't cope with thinking about what David Fuller had done to her tiny 9-year-old daughter. And eventually, when it came to sentencing David, the court said that due to current UK law, the maximum sentence that David could be given for necrophilia was 2 years, which is insane. What? But of course, he didn't just commit necrophilia. He also had possession of child pornography, which he received 10 years for, which again, in my opinion, that is not enough. And he also received an extra 2 years for secretly filming his wife's family member. So for everything that he did for 30 years, so all of the necrophilia, the abuse of the dead bodies in the hospitals for over 30 years, for all of the images that he had taken, videos, all of the child pornography, secret recordings, he only got 12 years. 12 years. 12 years. Oh my God, that makes my blood boil. But then David was also sentenced for the two horrific murders that he had committed in 1987. And thankfully, David was handed 2 whole life tariffs, meaning that he will never be released from prison. And this makes David Fuller one of only a few prisoners in the UK to be given 2 whole life sentences. And just thank God he is never going to get out, because I think it's very clear that he would offend again. I mean, he has been offending for 30 plus years and he had no intention of stopping. And in the aftermath of this case, it left huge scars in the families of the victims. One man even took his own life because of what David Fuller had done to his mother. There's so many victims to today's story. The families did receive compensation, but I don't see how that can make up for anything that David did. And this became another huge stain on the NHS. There was public outrage, just like there had been with Lucy Letby. And a full inquiry has been launched into the David Fuller case, trying to find out how he was allowed to get away with his crimes for so long, how he was able to commit necrophilia in an NHS hospital. However, the findings of this inquiry are still pending. It keeps getting delayed, which is very frustrating. I have been checking up on it every so often and it just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back. And I just hope when that inquiry, the results finally come out, I just hope that it gives the families some answers. And I just really hope that people learn from today's case. But I want to end this focusing on the 2 young women that David Fuller murdered. Wendy Nell was described by her family as a beautiful, generous, caring, and funny girl who had a brilliant smile and a kind word for everyone. All Wendy wanted in life was to settle down and have children. And she was soon to be engaged to her boyfriend Ian, and she still had so much ahead of her. She was taken far, far too soon. She was only 25 years old. Caroline Pierce was described as being incredibly sweet, friendly and kind. She had an amazing energy and aura about her. She was just always looking out for others. And all Caroline wanted in life was to have fun, settle down and live a long and happy life. She was also taken far, far too soon. She was only 20 years old. And this case has been truly horrific. There are so many victims of today's case. But I want to leave you with a statement from Neveres. Azra was an extraordinary human being. She lived for 24 years, but she touched so many people. She was compassionate, warm, an LSE law graduate. She became a beautiful woman and didn't see any barriers. She lived life to the full. She was my only child. I tried to protect Azra all my life, and when she was really helpless, lying there still, being raped and abused, she couldn't scream out. She couldn't call for me. She couldn't call the police. But I will ensure her voice is heard, and that will be my mission. And like I said earlier, my heart truly goes out to Neveres and every single family member, every single victim of David Fuller. And I hope, like Neveres wanted, that this sheds light and gives voices to the victims of David Fuller. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening today. Subscribe or follow to make sure you never miss an episode of The Criminal Makeup. And if you enjoy the show, it would really mean a lot if you could leave a 5-star review, because it really does help out the podcast. In the meantime, if you've been affected by any of the themes in this episode, please take the time to look at the description for this episode for some helpful resources. Special thanks to my producers at Audio Boom Studios, and I'll see you all in the next one.